Our next case this morning is number 06-3251, Lynette Metzger against the Illinois State Police. Mr. Baker. Mr. Baker, let's give counsel time to get settled.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.
Thank you, Judge Ripple. May it please the court and counsel, my name is John Baker. I represent the plaintiff, Lynette Metzger. Just by way of a brief background, Ms. Metzger has been employed by the Illinois State Police for many, many years. Even Ms. Metzger's harshest critics, however, acknowledge that she's always been an exceptional employee. Ms. Metzger and the ISP have, however, over the years, been quite litigious. Ms. Metzger has sued the ISP, and actually she's been before this court before on one of those cases. In 2003, one of Ms. Metzger's job duties, her primary job duties, was to assess whether a FOID card should be revoked from certain individuals where the state of Illinois had determined there was a clear and present danger that these individuals might cause harm. Ms. Metzger believed, and her supervisor, who was a sworn ISP employee, also believed that Ms. Metzger was performing jobs that were above and beyond her title. Her supervisor went to an individual named Kirk Lonbaum, who was in charge of the bureau, and asked Mr. Lonbaum if there was something that they could do about it to increase that position. Mr. Lonbaum at that time said, no, for budgetary reasons, there is nothing that we can do. Ms. Metzger then took advantage of an opportunity under the Illinois Personnel Code that she can appeal to a request, an audit from Central Management Services to determine whether her position is properly classified.
But, of course, I mean, I think one of the state's primary points is that it is CMS that decides on the classification. And I think your theory has to assume that CMS is somehow just the cat's paw of Mr. Lonbaum, but I don't see any evidence that they were behaving at Mr. Lonbaum's beck and call.
And Judge, what I would disagree with you to some extent there. And I guess what I would do is I would point out the anti-retaliation provisions of Title VII are quite different than the substantive provisions.
No, we're familiar with Burlington Northern against White, but the question is there anything that taints CMS's decision? Because if there isn't, if it's really just an independent administrative decision, regardless of whatever evil thoughts Mr. Lonbaum was having, how can her case be go forward?
Well, I think that there is. Mr. Lonbaum did intend to distort the process. First of all, Mr. Lonbaum has absolutely no role to play in the process, and he acknowledges that. Mr. Lonbaum then goes on to say that he believes that Ms. Metzger and Ms. Metzger's supervisor, both of them, the job duties that they maintain that she performed, he says they're grandiose, they're exaggerated, they're not what she does. And he relays this information to CMS. Now, he thinks he does it in a memo. He's been unable to produce the memo. But he provides this information to CMS. This is negative information that is provided to CMS.
But CMS did its own audit of her job, didn't it?
Well, CMS did an audit. However, this you have a supervisor, a fairly high-ranking supervisory employee in Mr. Lonbaum, essentially telling CMS that Ms. Metzger is lying to them.
No, and I don't think so. I think, I mean, as I read it, no one disagrees with the content of the job description, but you can put it down in a way that sounds more modest, or you can put it down in a way that sounds more grandiose, which I believe was the word he used. And he says it's just kind of an inflated view of the job.
That's exactly what he said. He said it's grandiose, it's excessive, it's not what she does, which suggests that she is exaggerating.
Well, it is what she does. It's just that, you know, you could say a law clerk, I guess, you know, writes opinions for the court. Well, no, the judges write the opinions for the court. The law clerks assist? Of course they do. I mean, it depends. It's just a question of emphasis, I think.
Well, and I understand that. I think in this situation, though, here you have a process that's supposed to be a neutral process. Mr. Lambam even says there's no role for him to play in this process. He says...
And what evidence from... Do you have any evidence from CMS that they were swayed by Mr. Lambam's views?
No. The people at CMS are no longer there. We could not get a hold of them, the people who actually performed the audit. There's very little documentation out there other than Ms. Metzger and Mr. Carlicker's statements. Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess I would point to the Szymanski case from this court. And I think that it's relevant. This was a 2006 decision, and this court held adverse in this setting has to mean, employing an objective standard, the dissemination of false reference information that a prospective employer would view as material to its hiring decision. Would view, not did view, but would view. And from our position, the unlawful act, the act of retaliation, is Mr. Lambam making the statements to CMS in the first place. To us, that is the act of retaliation. Now, what happens after that, I believe, is probably an issue of damages and what we could prove on damages. But I would also go back for many, many years ago, I think 1981, when...
I'm disturbed at the implication that you, in your statement, that CMS should not solicit views from people in the supervisory chain unless they're going to be positive. You know, and if they solicit views from somebody who might be negative, they'll wind up with a lawsuit like this.
Well, if those views are honest views, I think that that's one thing. But in this case, they're not honest views. I mean, you know, you have Mr. Lambam, who had previously told Mr. Carlicker, I don't care if Ms. Metzger is the best named employee in the world, she's not going to get promoted. And I agree with you. If this was an honest assessment, if Mr. Lambam truly believes that these are grandiose, these are inflated views, then at that time, he's correct. He can present that information. The question is, we don't believe that that's true. And we believe, based on Mr. Carlicker's statements, based upon Ms. Metzger's statements, that those are not true. Therefore, we believe that there's a jury question here, and that this is something that should be decided by a jury. I'm not suggesting that Mr. Carlicker shouldn't make his statement, but was that statement true or was that statement false? And I believe that that is a question that is properly before a jury. And if Mr. Lambam were able to establish or able to persuade a jury that was his honest belief, then he would be entitled to judgment. But I believe that there is a question of fact. And certainly there is a question of motivation. I mean, we have Mr. Lambam's earlier statements, coupled with Mr. Lambam testifying that she is a very good employee. We also have the earlier statements of Mr. DeRosa, who had been Mr. Lambam's immediate supervisor, and Mr. DeRosa told Ms. Metzger that as long as she has litigation pending, she's never going to get promoted. And this litigation, the previous litigation, wasn't decided until, I believe, 2004. The old case was still going on while these decisions were made. So, you know, we do have a motive. We do have a question of fact. And for that reason, I believe that summary judgment was improperly granted. I believe that's my warning time. So I do appreciate it, and I thank the court, and I will reserve the rest for rebuttal.
Thank you. Thank you, Baker. We'll hear now from Mr. McPike.
May it please the court, counsel. First, I want to correct one statement in my brief. It's a third fallback argument, but I don't want to mislead the court. We argued in our brief that regarding Ms. Metzger's second claim, which was that she was denied promotion to Mr. Carlicker's position when he vacated that position, we argued in our brief that, as a third fallback argument, that Mr. Lambam wasn't the decision maker, and we argued that there's no evidence that Ms. Metzger actually applied for that position. That's in our brief at page 17. I want to correct that. In preparing for this case and rereading the record, it's clear that Mr. Lonbaum wasn't the immediate decision maker. If you read his testimony in his deposition, which is in the record at Supplemental Appendix 69, he states that the usual procedure there is that the bureau chief makes the recommendation for who should fill that open position, Mr. Carlicker's position. And then it goes up the chain of command, ultimately to the director in CMS. At the time, Mr. Lonbaum was no longer the bureau chief. And that was the basis for argument that he wasn't the decision maker and that Ms. Metzger didn't apply. The proper procedure would have been for her to apply first to the bureau chief, who at that time was Mr. Giles, who had replaced Mr. Lonbaum. But we misstated slightly because Mr. Lonbaum was, in fact, up the chain of command. He was, at that time, the acting assistant deputy director. So I don't want to mislead the court. He would have been in the chain of command to be a decision maker on that second claim.
So he is a decision maker of some sort.
Well, he's in the chain of command, whether he's the ultimate decision maker.
Well, he has input.
Yeah, he does have input, and he may or may not have. But at least it raised a question of fact if we had gotten there.
Well, did she or did she not apply?
She made Mr. Lonbaum aware that she wanted the decision, that she was interested in the position, but the recommendation had to come from the bureau chief, which there's no, Mr. Lonbaum said there was no discussion with
how,
the
how do you
bureau
apply?
Chief. It's an informal process. I clarified that there was no posting, no formal human relations department posting, so it would have been what she should have done is gone to Mr. Giles, made him aware that she wanted the position. Mr. Giles would have made recommendations up the chain of command, ultimately to Mr. Lonbaum and then to the director. So,
is there an interview process, or are there people identified who have applied? Or
no, my understanding from the record is that it's a discussion. The recommendation goes up the chain of command. The bureau chief would have met with the acting director, Mr. Lonbaum. They would have discussed it. They would have made a recommendation to the director. It would have had to go on to the director at the CMS to approve it. So where the decision is actually made, it seems to be kind of a consensus process, and that's as far as the record goes.
Well, what about qualifications of being a sworn officer, for example?
Well, let me get into the entire argument then. Being a sworn officer is very clearly historically a qualification. Mr. Lombaum's deposition states that he created the position. He created the position with the intention that it would be a sworn officer. The people who had occupied that job since it was created, first was Mr. Whitley. He was a sworn officer. That's in the supplemental appendix, page 48. Then there was Mr. Carlicker, who was Ms. Metzger's supervisor. He was a sworn officer. And then Mr. Carlicker was ultimately placed by Mr. Atchison, who was also a sworn officer. Mr. Lonbaum's testimony is that that was always a requirement for the position. Ms. Metzger disputes whether that's necessary, but that's not an issue for, with respect, either the district court or this court to determine, contrary to the record, what the position should entail. It's clear from the record that that was always a requirement from the of the position, and it's equally undisputed. That's an undisputed fact, and it's undisputed that Ms. Metzger is not an officer.
What about, I think maybe the strongest argument from your opponent is that even if CMS was the ultimate decision maker on a lot of these things, we know from many cases that when the input that goes into the ultimate decision maker is tainted by discrimination, or in this instance perhaps retaliation, that sometimes is enough to allow a case to go forward and to see if the ultimate decision, you know, garbage in, garbage out, I guess. You know, if the only thing CMS saw was something that was manipulated by someone who was determined that she should never be promoted, then how can we trust its decision?
Well, the very quick answer is if you look at the record, which is in our appendix, on pages 5 through 9 of our appendix, you have the first decision by CMS on the initial survey, which clearly states that CMS compared her position with not only other positions in the state police, but with other positions in other agencies. That's why the state of Illinois created Central Management Services, to create a certain uniformity, not just within an agency, but among agencies. Second of all, even assuming that Mr. Longbaum had tainted the process by false information, and I'd like to state that there's nothing in the record that indicates his information was false. The memo that he submitted merely disagreed with Ms. Metzger's characterization of her position. That's why he wanted it sent to CMS. That's his testimony. I wanted this independent investigation. So that was the initial decision. It's fairly well laid out in their letter, which is at page 5 of our appendix. But then, under the state regulations, Ms. Metzger had the opportunity to go back again and ask for reconsideration. That second reconsideration was based only, this is undisputed, on the information that she provided. She was allowed to provide comparable positions that she believed showed that her position should have been upgraded.
Wouldn't they have looked, though, at the file from their original decision, or is it really a clean de novo process?
If you look at their long explanation of what they did, which is pages 6 through 9 of our appendix, it's clear that they took a look at her positions that she proffered and compared them with other positions and with the initial position. But you have to remember that initial determination was not just based on Mr. Longbaum.
Well,
they
sure
did an audit. So, and I apologize, we did not cite these cases in our brief because he did not raise the arguments, but if you look at this court's recent decisions in the Jennings case, which just came out in August, which involved the state of Illinois, you can see that there is no evidence that Mr. Longbaum influenced CMS to the degree under the Jennings case, under the Roskowiak case, under the Brewer case. There's no evidence like that in this record. That degree of influence, there's nothing in the record to support that kind of argument, which is probably why it wasn't made. And there's no evidence that CMS was the cat's paw. Clearly, it had multiple sources. Unless there's any further questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. McPike. How much time does Mr. Baker have? Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the Court. Again, I wanted to address a couple of the questions that you raised, Judge Mannion. The position was not posted, and there are really competing procedures on how positions at the Illinois State Police are going to be filled. There are merit comp employees, and then there are sworn employees. A sworn employee, this position was ultimately awarded to a sworn employee, would not go through CMS. They would simply be appointed to that position. The suggestion that this position had always been performed by a sworn police officer, the position had been for a couple of years, but the evidence established that prior to that it had been performed by a woman named Linda Traylor, who was not a sworn employee. And I think it's also important to note that there is nothing to state that the position has to be that of a sworn employee. When we have job descriptions in the state of Illinois for essentially every position that exists, there is nothing anywhere that says that position mandates that it be a sworn employee. All the people who had comparable positions, there were four of these different divisions within this bureau, all four of those individuals, or excuse me, the other three individuals, none of them were sworn law enforcement. The immediate supervisor of those individuals, Mr. Grubb, he was not a sworn law enforcement officer. Mr. Longbaum is not a sworn law enforcement officer. So I just wanted to make that clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Baker.